I'm Daniel Serwer. I'm our Vice President and Director for Peace and Stability Operations. I think this event is sponsored not only by my part of the Institute, but also by the Muslim World Initiative, and we're glad to have that co-sponsorship. Iraq and its neighbors, not a new subject to us. Iraq and Iran is a particularly important one, and when you throw in the U.S. as well, you really get a very complicated picture. I can't think of a better panel, though, to try to unravel all of these strands in this triangular relationship than the one we have today. Jeff Kemp, who'll lead off, is not new to the Institute. He's participated in a number of activities focused on Iraq and its neighbors here, and he is in the midst of preparing a report for us on Iraq and Iran. And I hope that this discussion will contribute in some way, and it'll give him a chance also to air some of his conclusions. Babak Rahimi has been a senior fellow at the Institute. He's one of our first intermittent senior fellows, I think. He's gone back to teach at the University of California at San Diego this year, but I think he'll be back again with us next summer. He spent the last summer with us, but he spent the last summer with us by going to Iran and Iraq, and he will have some interesting things to tell us, especially about relations within the Shia community in Iraq. Ken Pollack is well known in Washington. He tells me he hasn't spoken here for a couple of years, so we'll welcome him back. And it's a pleasure to have Ken. His writing and commenting on the situation in Iraq and Iran has, of course, been a central contribution to those subjects in Washington. And our own Dan Brunberg, also Georgetown's Dan Brunberg, we're glad to have him wrapping up today. I should mention at the outset that we do have a research effort going on Iraq and its neighbors. It started a long time ago. It's, you know, I always dread it when we put out some of these older pieces that we've written, and there's one out on the table from February 26, 2004, and you say to yourself, ooh, do I really want to read this, because it might be all wrong. Well, I think it stands up rather nicely, actually, in light of what's happened since, and remarkably to me, almost nothing that it recommended has been done. Iraq and its neighbors is still a sort of orphan subject, and I think it shouldn't be, and we'll do our best to make sure that it doesn't remain an orphan subject for the next year and a half or so. Without further ado, let me ask Jeff Kemp to take the floor.
Well, thank you very much, Dan, and I think this is an appropriate morning to discuss the subject, even though we've got a lot of competition in New York, where these very issues are being discussed by the President of the United States, and presumably, when he gets to speak, the President of Iran. And since we're all, I think, qualified to speak about various components of this subject, what I was asked to do and what I will do is focus just in 12 minutes on how the situation in Iraq is impacting upon the overwhelming concern the United States and the Europeans have about the Iranian nuclear program. But to get to that point, I want to first just say a few lines about the perspectives, as I see them, from both Washington and Tehran concerning the broader security issues and how Iraq fits into it. As you know, the President's State of the Union address of January 2002, Iran was placed on the axis of evil. It was a founding member for three essential reasons. One, great concern about its weapons of mass destruction programs, including nuclear missiles and, to a lesser extent, their chemical activity. Second, its continued support for terrorist activities that, in the past at least, have killed Americans as well as Arabs and Israelis and Iranians. Third, its rejection of Israel's right to exist and its campaign against the peace process, a policy that's totally unacceptable both to the United States and most of our allies. And therefore, since that moment, when it achieved axis of evil status, I mean, American policy has been essentially to change Iranian behavior in these three areas, but particularly in the last couple of years with the focus on the WMD nuclear question. Now, as is obvious, and this is why we're meeting here today, American leverage on Iran concerning the three issues that put it on the axis of evil have clearly been influenced by what has happened in Iraq since the invasion in 2003. It's also been influenced by energy considerations, including the price of oil, which we simply cannot discount in this equation. Now, looked at from the Iranian perspective, and again, these are my perspectives of what I think perspective from certain people in Tehran might be. Here you are, you've been designated a candidate for the axis of evil in early 2002. You have just witnessed the most extraordinary display of American military power in Afghanistan. You're faced with the prospects of an American invasion of Iraq, and therefore the overwhelming presence of American military forces literally on your doorstep. And yet, you know, you hate Saddam Hussein and everything he stands for. You hate the Ba'ath regime and would like to see it go away. The problem for the Iranians has been that once we got rid of Saddam, they then had to worry and still have to worry about the post-Saddam Iraq. And I think one could really think about their concerns about Iraq in sort of three categories in order of priority. I think their nightmare scenario was, and to some extent might still be, although it's diminishing, that Iraq does indeed become an American puppet, that we are so successful that we have in place in Iraq a government that does what we want, allows us bases, is essentially a surrogate of American military power. That is a serious threat to any Iranian regime, particularly the current Iranian regime. The second threat would clearly be one where Iraq was not perhaps a puppet of the United States, but where Iraq had evolved to something we might call a secular Western democracy that had institutions that were much freer than those amongst its neighbors, that it had good relations with the United States and the West, and that it might even have relations with Israel. That also poses, I think, a serious challenge for the Iranian regime. But the third and last category, and there are other nuances of threat in between, but the other scenario I'm certain that the Iranians have worried about and still worry about, and I think we will talk about more in this panel, is that none of the above apply, that Iraq doesn't even get together, and that what you have in Iraq is chaos, civil war, because that immediately draws them into the throes of a country which they are already deeply involved in. And I think it's against this backdrop of the two perspectives from Washington and Tehran that one has to see the debate about the nuclear issue and how the current events in Iraq are affecting that debate. Now, my basic hypothesis, if you like, is that the success of America in Iraq, combined with the stabilization of oil prices or even the fall in oil prices, because oil prices, believe you me, can fall, as we discovered in the mid to late 90s with the Asian economic collapse, would clearly have put great pressures on the Iranian regime, and they might then, under those circumstances, be prepared to cooperate with the Europeans and Washington on the issues of nuclear power. Alternatively, you know, if we do indeed continue to be bogged down in Iraq with no victory in sight, with increasing signs of not American success but Iranian success, if oil continues to be in tight supply because of global demand, then my hypothesis is that Iranian willingness to compromise is going to be very limited, and that these difficulties have clearly been compounded by the election of a government, a new president in Iran, who has essentially consolidated conservative control over the country, and the election of the emergence of a government in Iraq that, by all intents and purposes, by all accounts, is very friendly disposed towards Tehran. So where then does this leave us in the context of the nuclear debate? I think if you go back over the past 3 years, there is some circumstantial evidence. It's not something you can prove in any scientific way, but I certainly think the timelines look correct, that Iranian attitudes towards their willingness to cooperate with Europe and the United States on the nuclear issues have been directly related to the successes and failures of the American military operations in Iraq. In the early summer of 2003, you remember, just after we had toppled the statue, I mean, this was perhaps the peak, the high point of American euphoria about the war. There were the boasts, not made, I must admit, by the administration, but by some of its more exuberant supporters, that issued the famous phrase, you know, that men go to Baghdad, but real men go to Tehran. And there was this little window of expectation that the overwhelming speed of the American victory, together with what has happened in Afghanistan, could it in effect be unleashed on Iran if the circumstances were right. And it's not coincidental that during this period, the late spring and summer of 2003, the Iranian government showed considerable flexibility and diplomatic common sense in showing a willingness to negotiate with the Europeans very seriously on the nuclear issue that led later in the fall of 2003 to an agreement that was followed by further agreements that they would put on hold their nuclear enrichment and fuel cycle development activities, trying to negotiate a compromise. But again, if you look at the record, I think it's quite clear that by the late fall of 2003, when it was clear that the U.S. victory was appearing to be more elusive, the Iranians began to dig in their heels and became much more intransigent about dealing with both the Europeans and particularly the United States on this matter. This was the period, you remember, when the former president of Iran, Mr. Rafsanjani, referred to the United States as a wounded beast. Now, he said, you know, the wounded beast poses a threat because it can get angry, but on the other hand, it may show that it cannot do what it's doing in Iraq elsewhere, i.e., we were getting bogged down, and that this should be encouraging for the Iranians. Now, as the Iranians were essentially digging their heels in because they saw that we did not have the sort of super leverage that we might have had right after the fall of Saddam, the United States was, thankfully, beginning to improve its relationship with the Europeans and adopt a more cooperative spirit that reached a climax, really, after Bush's second term. When he went to Europe in February and agreed for the first time very publicly to support the European positions on nuclear negotiations, and indeed even offered some some carrots for the Iranians. Obviously not enough, but it was a start. So just at the moment that the United States and Europe were really getting their act together and talking in unison on the nuclear matter, the Iranians had an election. They elected the mayor of Tehran. I will not try to pronounce his name because I know I'll get it wrong the first time, and I only have one more minute left. But let me just say this, that the Iranians, irrespective of the election, I think were bound to reject the proposals the Europeans made that essentially was to freeze their nuclear fuel cycle activities in exchange for very considerable cooperation on the whole array of nuclear power technology absent the fuel cycle. And this is the situation we find ourselves in today, namely that an Iranian government with, I would say, considerable public support, in fact some would say overwhelming public support, about the right of Iran to have access to nuclear technology, is digging its heels in, and that the regime is much more confident than it has been for many, many years because A, it has public support on this issue, B, it has consolidated its own power base, the conservatives now control everything, C, Iraq, we are not doing well, and D, they are sitting on a nice little nest egg of oil reserves and oil surpluses that cushion them in event that this issue could even go to the UN Security Council, which I do not think is likely. So, this current situation, the current situation in Iraq, the situation in the world oil market, clearly reduces American options in taking a tough line towards the Iranians on the nuclear issue as well as terrorism and the peace process. The unilateralism of the early Bush years is gone, but even the joint U.S.-European cooperative initiative seems unlikely to yield any concessions from the Iranians at this point in time. And, I might add, this coincides with the reality that, at least in the short run, I don't want to exaggerate this too much, but at least in the short run, Iran's relations with Iraq are the best they have been in decades. Remember, Iran has extremely close ties with the Shia community of Iraq, and particularly the leaders of the present government. The Grand Ayatollah Sistani, considered by many to be the most important and powerful player in Iraq, meets with the Iranian foreign minister, but does not meet, to the best of my knowledge, with American officials. That says quite a lot for the occupying power. The Iraqi and Iranian governments have signed agreements on a whole array of issues. Whether they are consummated remains to be seen, but at least they've signed them on border security, tourism, energy cooperation. I mean, this is the axis of evil we're talking about here, dealing with the country we have just liberated. So, the bottom line here is that if in the short run the Iranians continue to consolidate their influence in Iraq, and in the long run, I agree, things could change because there are some natural tensions between these two neighbors. But in the short run, this clearly gives the Iranians a lot of leverage to use against the United States if we were ever to decide to become more belligerent on the issue of nuclear, their nuclear power. And therefore, I conclude that one of the ironies of the Iraq war is that Iran has emerged as one of the strongest players in the region. Its nuclear program is now on track and is unlikely to be derailed absent a dramatic reappraisal by countries such as China and Russia about the threat and their own interests in Iran, which are considerable. And that therefore the Iraqi situation, Iraq, rather than becoming the sort of model for spreading Western democracy throughout the region, the stepping off point, has at this point in time become a liability for American power and prestige, with the residual beneficiary being the conservative regime of Iran. This doesn't have to be the case forever, but I think that is the situation as of September the 14th, 2005.
Thank you very much.